if you want buy-in, you need to invite people in to make the ideas their own, even if the strategies have already been decided, especially when the ideas have been decided.
Welcome to the Jason Mark Campbell Business Podcast, where we explore what it really takes to sell, lead, and grow a business, and ultimately, live well. In every episode, we go beyond tactics to discover how entrepreneurs and leaders across different sectors are growing with love, impact, and integrity. Welcome back, everybody, to the Jason Mark Campbell Podcast. I have a great conversation with somebody I'm genuinely looking to learn so much from. As somebody who stepped into a leadership role within a growing organization, I always love bringing on the guests that have experience when it comes to scaling organization, taking it to the next level, and having a human-first approach, which is why Dave Garrison, who's joining me today, is the perfect guest to talk about this. He is a seasoned leadership strategist, former CEO, trusted board member with over 25 years of experience guiding public and private organizations around the globe. He is the co-founder and Chief Navigation Officer of Garrison Growth, where he helps organizations, high-growth startup, global corporations, build high-performing teams, cultivate a culture of ownership, sustainable results, and he's just recently released his book, which is The Buy-In Advantage, Why Employees Stop Caring and How Great Leaders Can Inspire Everyone to Give It Their All. He's been bringing methodologies like DISC, Emotional Intelligence, Vern Harness's Rockefeller Habits, and truly helping bring companies results and doing it in a people-first strategy, which is what I'm all about. And I'm so excited for this conversation. Dave, welcome to the show.
Jason, thanks for having me.
First off, congratulations on the book release. Now, one thing I didn't confirm is this the first major publication that you're releasing from all of the experience you have?
It is, and a lot of the principles in the book I got to use as part of the book because I knew nothing, honestly, about publishing. I thought I was an okay writer. Turns out to be not so until I had experts say, well, you know, let us work on this. And it's been a great experience, and the reaction has been phenomenal. It reached the USA Today bestseller list, which is significant because it's a book about business, but that list includes all the beach junk novels we love to read. So I felt like that was a great accomplishment. Amazon said it's the best new read in culture. And so I've gotten great feedback from readers, and it's just been a gratifying experience.
Well, you were saying just before we hit the record that, you know, it's great to be selling books, but you have a big purpose as to what motivates you to go out and do the amazing work you do working with organizations. Maybe this is a great place to start, which is you're doing great things and you're driven more than profits. So what's the great purpose behind Dave?
Unlocking the potential of millions and millions of people. And so when I am able to achieve my higher purpose, it's really about providing the tools to unlock potential. The people for whom I'm able to unlock potential, I'll probably never meet, but I'll have the satisfaction of knowing that great leaders have taken on the ideas and applied them. And these ideas, I put them in a business framework. It's really about life. It's about how you show up in life.
I would be curious to know, when you went out and brought this message forward and when you work with organization, obviously you work a lot with leaders and you're helping them bring the kind of strategies and mindsets that actually achieve results. So my question to you to kind of kick this off is, are you seeing that you're bringing in knowledge that most leaders never heard before? Are we reminding people of what works and we've lost our way? What's the current climate for leaders right now?
What's really interesting is, we're in a crisis, a buy-in crisis right now. Gallup says we're at a 10-year low of employees giving a crap. In the U.S., and look in London, it's half the rate of the U.S. And look in South Africa, it's horrible. Spain, it's France is And so it's not any leader's fault. But what's true is employees generally don't care. It doesn't mean they don't show up. It doesn't mean they're not happy. I mean, if you say, are you happy? Well, yeah, I appreciate the job and everything else, but I'm not feeling fulfilled. I'm doing what you asked me to do, but not a lot more. You know, I show up and I listen and go, And that's not buy-in. And so we're in a buy-in crisis. It's not leaders' fault. It's not anybody's fault. It's that we've never been shown the techniques that create the opportunity for people to be them full selves, to contribute everything they've got. I mean, imagine the enthusiasm or excitement that you see at a football game, whether it's European football, US football, you see enthusiasm. What happened to that enthusiasm when those same people get to the workplace? I was introduced to this concept in South Africa where a leader said to me, my employees are kind of shiftless and worthless. And I thought, wow, that's a scathing indictment. And I went and talked to some of our managers at the company I was CEO of in South Africa, and they said, go to YouTube and watch the videos of some of the football games, and you tell me that the average South African is shiftless or worthless there or not. And so the question is, what happened in the workplace? Where did that loss occur? And I think it simply occurred, as I said, because we've never been shown as leaders proven methods to generate the culture that allows people to fully buy in, to lean in, to contribute their full selves to whatever it is we're trying to achieve. We just don't have the techniques.
You know, I've interviewed a lot of leaders in the space of like leadership that share some of the elements that are a bit more human first, which I believe is quite aligned with what you teach as well. But there seems to be a resistance to adopting these kinds of strategies because they seem to take time. Maybe they don't feel as intuitive. I feel perhaps as a leader, I have pressure to bring like results now. And it's like, oh, I have to develop culture. Yeah, I've heard that, but whatever, I need to make some profits. Like that seems to be a de facto in the leadership space. Is that a fair assumption?
Sometimes it is. You know, we're in a hurry. We've got to get the doggone results. Let's go. We don't have time to fool around with this other stuff. But what's interesting? What's really interesting, Jason, is we have time to spend re-interviewing because good talent left. We have time to chase people to follow up on stuff we ask them to do. We have time to do another strategy meeting, and we look at our old strategy and realize we never really implemented it because we got distracted by other stuff. So we've got lots of time to waste. And so I'd ask, what would happen if we reapply that time that we're wasting on follow-up, redoing, retraining, rehiring, and what if we put that into just simply asking people to participate in creating great, invite them in. But there's some myths that leaders have to overcome before that can happen.
Tell me more about these myths.
Well, one is you have to have the answers. If you have to have the answers and you show up with the answers as a leader, then the message to me is, okay, I'm along for the ride. Just tell me what to do. And if your job is to tell people what to do, then you've already eliminated buy-in. They just can show up and do whatever, and they'll try to do their best. And so imagine somebody comes to you and says, hey, Jason, I've got a challenge here, and I'm wondering what your advice would be. What do you think I ought to do about? And they lay out a situation. Do you tell them what you do, or do you recognize the opportunity to help them grow a muscle of decision and ask, you know, I'm curious, what would you do? And when they tell you what they would do, you then have an option. You can either use curiosity or judgment. Judgment would sound like, I don't think that would work. Why don't you try this instead? You're not helping the person by telling them what to do. Curiosity, and leaders who are really great would say instead, hey, you know, that's really interesting. What else did you consider? How'd you come up with that solution? Because that person will teach you how they think. When you know how they think, you can then leverage your experience as follows. You can simply say, hey, if you also considered this factor, how would it affect your thinking? How would it change your thinking? If you considered how many weeks it would take us to train everybody on that solution, if you considered how much waste that would create, or whatever your concern is. And so great leaders have the insights to use their experience to form their checklists or criteria, and they share criteria with other people instead of telling them what to do. Telling them what to do is holding them back from their own potential.
Oof. So I have something that comes to my mind in the way that I've approached how I go into organization. And, you know, when I usually come in, there's a problem and they want someone to come in and solve a lot of that problem. And I'm pretty good at jumping in and seeing from a different perspective. I have conversations with everyone on the team to get an idea of the culture. I usually set some quarterly priorities, which is going to be around like fixing a bit of the mess. And I think this might actually be a problem that I'm also creating, because I think the culture that comes from doing that is I'm not giving people a chance to own their own problems. And now they're like, we have a savior here. And it's almost like disenfranchising or disempowering some of the team. I feel like I might be needing to get my own retraining in the process.
You know, first of all, being humble enough to say maybe there's a different approach puts you well ahead of many leaders. It's a pretty low bar, but you're right, that is disenfranchising them, but with a good intent. You're not doing that to try to disenfranchise people. You're trying to get results quickly, but the results will be much more powerful if it is their idea as opposed to your idea, and you can apply your experience to influence their thinking, not by saying, "Don't you think you should?" but by asking questions about what if you considered. So, you know, this idea of a checklist in your head, I think, is a really important one. And one of the stories in the book is about a great CEO named Jeff Edison. And I was facilitating an offsite with his leadership team, small group of executives, and very successful company. And he came in and said, "Hey, I'm going to bring another executive into this team." And the group looked pretty surprised. You might even say shocked. Kind of like when mom and dad bring home another kid. It's like, wait a minute, what happened to me? I was king of the hill. Wait, well, what's the deal? And I said, "Jeff, have you given this a lot of thought?" And he said, "Yes, I have." And I said, "Before you tell us who you're thinking about, tell us what you considered." And he said, "You know, I'm thinking about somebody who works as hard as we do, somebody who's well-respected in the organization, and somebody who thinks differently than the people in this room." And I said, "That's awesome." I said, "Let's take a minute, and on your own, I'd like everybody in this room to write down any additional items you would have on your checklist if you were thinking about the next person to join the team." So gave them time on their own, which is part of the collective genius process we talk about in the Buy-In Advantage. Then I asked, "Okay, share." And they gave me about three or four different criteria in addition to work hard, thinks differently, and accepted in the organization. With that list of six criteria, I then said, "All right, take a minute on your own. I want you to brainstorm on your own who in the organization might fit that criteria list." And everybody scribbled down names, and I asked, "Okay, who are the names?" And they gave me a list, and they're about 10 or 12 people. And I said to the CEO, "So do you want to tell us who?" He said, "No, I want to think about it because this was really helpful." And there's a premise in the book that says all of us are smarter than any of us. All of us are smarter than any of us, meaning that we all have blind spots, but yet if we can agree on what the problem we're trying to solve is very specifically, which is in this case, who would we want to bring on? And if we can agree on the checklist, then we can all apply our own experience against the same problem and criteria. And then ideas don't have ownership. We don't have any drama in making decisions. And whatever we come up with, everybody will be bought into because they were in the process all the way along.
What comes to my mind right now is understanding at what point can you do a process like this? Is it at a point where you have a certain level of leaders that are part of the organization? Because if you're a smaller organization, probably you're just the CEO and you're making all the decisions yourself. You're the founder. At what point does a decision-making process like this become really beneficial?
Yeah, when there are more than, say, three people. And the reason I say that is because, let me ask you this. If you're a CEO of a small company, I'm going to assume you hired the people. I'm going to assume you hired the people because you thought they had something to bring to the table. Even if their experience is not in your business, they have experience to bring to the table. We're asking them to generate solutions, not make decisions, but to generate solutions. And then there's another step in the process, which we call weigh the ox, which is based on an old story that happened in the UK in the early 1900s, where a statistician lived in a small rural village that held a county fair. And of course, they had livestock at that fair. And one of the pieces of livestock was a dead ox hanging on a rope. He said, "I wonder if the people who come to this fair can guess the weight of the ox." So all 800 and something people came, guessed the weight of the ox. And the statistician went through all the answers and said, "They're all wrong." However, being a statistician, he couldn't help himself, so he averaged all the answers. And they were within a couple of pounds of the 1,272-pound ox, because all of us are smarter than any of us. Fast forward to the 1960s, the U.S. Navy lost a submarine, lost a submarine in the North Atlantic, it's a big deal because submarines carry military secret, have lots of lives on board. It's an important asset. It's a big deal. But they identified the search area for their submarine in such a wide area, it would take them months to search. So they reached out to 100 experts around the world and said, where is our sub? And the experts were experts in weather and oceanography, study of metals. And they said, where's our sub? And they basically processed the answers and identified a location 1,000 miles west of the Azores, deep in the North Atlantic. The sub was within 200 yards of the place they identified. Fast forward two presidential elections ago, and I asked my classmates from around the world, I said, drop into the chat box. It was last election. Tell me who's going to win the election and by how much. No discussion. They all dropped their answers in. This was October, 6 weeks before the election. I didn't pay any attention to their answers, but I recorded them. February comes along. I realize I've got to give them their answer. So I went back and I calculated exactly what they said. What they said the results would be was within 0.4%, 0.4% of the actual results. How did they know that? We didn't have any discussion. They knew that because all of us are smarter than any of us. And so we have a process called Weigh the Ox, where we list out the 20 alternatives that we come up with and then give people votes and ask them to vote. If you get five votes, you can put all five against one. You can vote three votes on one, one vote on each of five. And all I'm asking you to do with zero discussion, Jason, is apply your experience. And you don't have to be an expert in submarines. You don't have to be an expert in elections. You don't have to be an expert in oxes. You have to have an opinion.
That's very interesting. You know, when I'm in a leadership meeting, we just had our strategy meeting actually last Friday. And I'll tell you what happens when I'm in these strategy sessions where, you know, I'm general manager. We have our founders, shareholders. We have some external advisors. And not every opinion is weighed the same. Particularly in our scenario, we have an external advisor who carries a very strong opinion and it dominates the conversation. I'm sure you've never seen anything like that before.
Never.
So this seems to be a common thing, right? Because again, one of the things you said that kind of pushed me back is I'm not supposed to know the answers, but I'm actually expected to make the decisions and I feel like the answers should be coming from me. And so I get into this meeting, I'm hearing for a lot of opinions, some of them louder than others. This seems to be a common moment in organizations. So I'd like for you to maybe unpack what's typically going on and what are things that I should be looking for.
Well, let's unpack that situation. So a question would be, did we agree on the very specific question we're trying to address, or was it a bundle of issues around a quote unquote problem?
It was to set some fourth quarter priorities and discussing some three major areas like product, marketing, technology investments.
Okay. So what I would recommend is what we call in strategic planning, which is, where are we on the map? So this is pre-work that's done. Has everybody filled out a questionnaire that basically says, from your perspective, what is working, what is not working, and what has changed since we last met? What's working, what's not working, what has changed? So we have to agree where we are. Imagine it's a map. We have to agree on where we are before we can agree on where we want to go. And so armed with that information ahead of time, you share those inputs with everybody in the meeting. Because the other thing I would tell you is, when we go into a group of leaders and we say, hey, how many of you can give me feedback right away if I pass out a data sheet? How many of you want to think about it overnight? Half the people want to think about it overnight. So if you try to solve real time, you're leaving half the voices out of the conversation. So whatever data you can share ahead of time and ask the specific question you want to know, which is, you know, basically, what do you think it's most important that we focus on in the next quarter? And then you share your criteria. And when it comes to planning, what I've observed and what I've experienced as CEO is, the most important things that really move the needle generally take multiple people and multiple quarters. It's not some idea we can implement in 4 weeks' time. So the question would be, what are the biggest opportunities for us to truly move the needle and change the organization? And that's what we'd say strategy is about. That's different from tactics of, oh golly, what do we need to do this quarter about sales? So framing the exact issue you want addressed. Are we talking about how to move the needle so that in 18 months we have dramatically different results? Or do you want to know what we ought to do in technology this quarter? Two very different questions. Then introduce your criteria. You know, our criteria is it's got to be with an existing budget. It's got to be a simple idea everybody will understand. It's got to be something that, you know, whatever your criteria is, it's something we can accomplish in four quarters or whatever. When you have that, you can better focus the conversation, because otherwise it's the ping pong match of loudest voices.
So Dave, you speak about this loudest room in the match, and it does sound like there's a lot more preparation to do when we have these quarterly meetings. And my usual moment of getting stuck is everybody is very much into execution, and it's almost like we are not setting aside time for thinking. And again, a lot of pressure to deliver on results. And I'm also someone that's very biased towards going to get my hands dirty, getting into, getting things done. I need to set aside the time, and I want to see the buy-in of my leaders to also set a time to prepare for these meetings. But it seems like we're caught up in the whirlwind of just getting things done.
Yeah.
You've never experienced that before neither, right?
No. And here's what happens. So let's agree that we can do better in sales. So We've set a new sales goal, and this quarter, we're going to grow by 25%. Awesome. Everybody's in violent agreement. By the way, it's not a strategy, it's just a measure. But let's assume we're in violent agreement on that. Here's what happens. Engineering goes off and starts to design stunning new products or services that we can use. Marketing creates a marketing plan that will promote the products and features advertising to promote the products. Sales increases commission and decreases pricing to hit the numbers, and we're all moving in a different direction based on where we think the world is with no plan. But every department has a perfect plan. And that is absolutely a great way to make sure we don't hit the goal. And then we ask, what happened? And sales will say, well, I didn't have the product I needed from engineering. And marketing will say, well, sales didn't execute, and et cetera. So we need to take the time to say, okay, if we want to increase sales, let's agree, what does that look like? Sales of what? To whom? Is it existing product? Is it new product? And whatever the plan is fine, but we need to align on what it is before we go execute, and then understand how we'll get it done.
Dave, you obviously are speaking as someone who's been in executive positions for a few years. You've worked with various industries and organizations. How was it at the beginning? Like, how did you get into being in these types of position and nurturing this kind of knowledge? Because you obviously started from somewhere. And I kind of want to go back into what were some of the early decisions that you've made to step into this role, and some of the ways that you've made good decisions in those roles to continue on this path.
And bad decisions. And I've learned equal amounts from both. So I'll give you a couple of examples. So basically, I did the traditional MBA, went to work on staff managing broadcast organizations in the U.S., and realized if I stayed on staff, I would never get to the real world. So I asked to be a salesperson, selling broadcast airtime in Dallas, Texas. And that is a very humbling gig, because you've got nothing but ideas to sell. And what I learned is the only ideas that count are your clients' ideas. And you'll see that theme running through the book, in the sense that we have a chapter devoted to managers tell and leaders ask. And it wasn't, did you want to buy some airtime? Would you like some airtime from me? Imagine how that will change your business, because we got the number one ratings and blah, 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 and nobody cares. The question is really, what is it you're most excited about in your business? What do you see the biggest opportunities as? And really understand and step into what that person's life looks like, and you can figure out and apply your experience to how you can support that. Or say, do you know what? I'm really not able to support you with what I do, but here's another contact. Here's somebody else who might be able to support you. And so I'll be authentically curious listen deeply and be honest with people to tap into the collective genius.
Well, now you have me wanting to go a little deeper on the sales part, because you know that's a big part of my DNA as well. And I have to kind of load the question with, how much do you feel that your decision to go take on a sales role has supported you in future leadership roles?
Every single leadership role is a sales role, but it's not because I'm selling people. It's because I'm listening to people. And so if you could imagine a clock with, instead of numbers on the clock, there are three places where the hand points. One says, tell. I'm going to tell you what to do. Another says, I'm going to sell you on my idea. And the third says, I'm going to engage you. What we know is organizations that have sustainable, great results engage people. It's not because they've sold people on the ideas of the leader. It's not because they tell people what to do. It's because they share the issue we're trying to solve for. They share the criteria and ask people to participate. Or if it's a larger organization and the senior team has gone off and done the dark room secret meeting stuff and come out with three priorities, then there's an opportunity for middle management to take those priorities to their team and say, hey, you know what? This is what the organization has come up with as our priorities for this quarter. I'm curious to know, one, what questions do you have about these priorities? Two, how do you see our department and support these priorities? What ideas do you have? And then to go through the same process where people create their own ideas, prioritize those ideas, vote on those ideas, and make it theirs. Otherwise, it's, here's what management has decided. And you feel done to, not done with. So if you want buy-in, you need to invite people in to make the ideas their own, even if the strategies have already been decided, especially when the ideas have been decided.
Hey, this conversation is going to get me going into the work. As we were talking on different time zone, I'm starting my day. I know you're ending yours. And I have a leadership meeting, our weekly leadership today. And I'm like, I'm going to be taking a lot of the energy you shared on the conversation today into these conversations as well. And I think I might actually just take an opportunity for any listener here, whether you're owning a company, scaling a company, managing a company, I would highly encourage for you to pick up a copy of the book as well as engage with Dave. If you go to garrisongrowth.com, I was actually there myself, and I know there's some free consultations that are being offered as well. So if you're seeing or resonate with any of the message that's happening here, I mean, for me, I feel like I'm being quite humbled. I'm not doing anything maliciously. You know, that's, I think, what a lot of people might assume is, like, a lot of leaders have this malicious energy, but it's like, I'm trying to do my best. There's a lot of assumptions I'm playing with. There's a lot of expectations that I'm assuming are put upon me. And I kind of taken a step back and going, I have more to learn and I need to humble myself a little bit. And if anybody else is kind of in that same zone, I would encourage you to engage at least with reading the book. If not, go ahead and book a consultation. I feel like you have so much wisdom that you've grown over. And you've talked about how a lot of bad decisions have shaped a lot of your growth. Just for the sake of maybe giving permission for a lot of other people who are currently making mistakes, do you have a favorite mistake or a favorite lesson on your journey?
Oh boy. Just because I was talking about broadcast and it brought up broadcast for me, I'll share that. But let me also say, look, you can do your own assessment in 90 seconds of where you are on the buy-in spectrum. If you go to a site called buyinbook.com, B-U-Y-I-N-B-O-O-K, buyinbook.com, 90 seconds, do your self-assessments, free, it's online, it's got a sample chapter, all that stuff, no obligation, check it out. And you can say, this could be for me, or no, this is not for me. Either way is fine. But when you're ready, it is there. So an example, leadership is about balance. You've got to balance the needs of clients. You need to balance the needs of shareholders. You need to balance the needs of employees. And you need to do it in the context of your compelling purpose. Why are you doing this? And your values, the company values. And if any of those get out of kilter, nothing good happens. And I once sold an advertising package that was really wonderful. It was the biggest sale the stations had ever made. And I was getting all kinds of accolades. But when we heard the advertising on air, it was overwhelming and burned people out. It hurt the audience, even though it was serving the advertiser, because things got out of balance. And so it's all about balance. And so if I had been thoughtful about the criteria of it's something that has to serve the advertiser and serve the viewer and serve the shareholder, et cetera, I would have never, ever made that deal. But I didn't know that at the time. I wish I had the buy-in advantage 20 years ago. I wish I had, because this is not, let me tell you how I did it. These are stories I've learned from other leaders on how they've created great, despite the fact that most employees don't care.
We just finished an employee NPS score, which was a survey we've sent out for evaluating the culture of the organization. And, you know, we're still a very small organization. Founder has a very large presence. There's still this like family tribe size of organization. We're under 25 employees or 30 employees. And so to me, it seems very easy to maintain the culture at that size. But I also have an understanding that the more you grow, the less of that family vibe might be carried, or there could be a more of a professionalization of the organization that could cause a lack of buy-in. Am I navigating a dangerous territory right now?
So let's talk about NPS scores in particular, or any employee survey. What typically happens is the leadership gets the results of the survey and everybody pores over it and they make meaning of it. Oh, look, it's up. Oh, it's down. Oh, it would be this if this happened. Oh, blah, blah, blah. And we really don't know what it means. Let's be honest. The only people who know what it means are the people who took the dang survey. So what if we looked at a question that had the most disagreement? All right. And did small groups and said to people, hey, I'm really curious to know, what do you think people were thinking about when they answered this question? What would be the number one issue to be overcome to change this answer? And how would you do it? And we lead clients through what we call the discovery process, where they actually have the people who took the survey create ways to change the results. And so one of the things I would say is recognize we don't know what the results mean. Only the people who took it know what it means and what to do about it, because we don't have the experience of the people doing the work. They're closest to it. They know best. And that's where all of us know more than any of us comes into play. And so I would say, wow, what an opportunity to say thank you for completing the survey. If it's okay, we'd like to do a little more digging. What do you think people were thinking about when they answered this one question this way? What might they have been thinking about? Not how did you answer it? What might people? So we go to the third person, much as your clients do in Kuala Lumpur. You'd always go to the third person, right? What would people be thinking if they answered the question this way? And then ask them to identify the factors that create that, then prioritize the factors that create that answer, and then come up with solutions and implement the solutions. And so it's a wonderful invitation. Yeah.
You know, as you say this, I'm actually even thinking about when we send NPS scores to our clients, right? And like, I'm someone that loves the data, but I love the human more. And so even as I get some survey data, I'm always like, yeah, but you can't just take the survey data and start executing. I feel like you need to go talk to people. You need to like get your hands dirty. I want to go on the customer support department and answer some of the tickets so I can see how are people writing, what's going on there. And I feel that's the magic that's missing. You've given it a framework for people to actually bring it back to quantifiable data.
Yeah. Absolutely. And, you know, it's all about data, but data has no meaning except the meaning that individuals give it. So if it's management giving it the meaning, then we're going to be lost because they're giving meaning based on their experience. But managers aren't many of us. Managers are one in four of us, maybe. Right. So how about if we had the people who are actually doing the work to give it meaning and teach us? What a concept. Does it take more time? Absolutely positively. Does it generate better results? Absolutely positively. So the question is, are we in a hurry to get results, or do we want results that are sustainable and scalable? Not a right or wrong answer. What do you want?
Dave, You've shared all these methodologies. You've just launched this book. I go to your website and I see you've grown organization sales from 20 million to 100 million. You've reduced turnover and brought retention down 20%. You've negotiated seven-figure deals and you've worked executive teams through billion-dollar acquisitions. And I feel it. Like, I love making interviews, and the conversation I have with you is the amount of wisdom that is under your belt is incredible. And I'm so glad you've taken the time to put these stories together to support other leaders. I know I'm going to be one of them picking up a copy and reading through this to support my own growth. And I actually have a feeling that we'll be having further conversations, not on a podcast, but perhaps on supporting some growth in organizations that I am doing. And I'm encouraging for everybody else listening, if you've been looking for some direction, insight, and inspiration as a leader on how to do the things that actually work. Again, I'm going to pick up a copy and I recommend you to do the same. The Buy-In Advantage, Why Employees Stop Caring and How Great Leaders Inspire Everyone to Give It Their All. There is an assessment to that book, which we are going to include a link in the description. So go and grab, do that 90-second assessment, see if this is going to be relevant for you. And Dave, this has just been a wonderful conversation. So thank you for your time. Thank you for coming on the show. Thank you for the work that you do. And just for fun, I'm going to ask you the question I love asking every guest that comes on the show, which is, you know, a big thing that I speak about is selling with love. I would love to hear from you. What does selling with love mean to you?
It means dedicating yourself to basically serving others. When you can deeply listen to where people are, that's step one, and you can be creative in how you provide solutions to help them get there faster, wherever it is there is for that person, that's selling with love. Because selling is one of the highest service professions, one of the noblest professions there is, if it's done from the standpoint of serving others. Because frankly, I hear people say, well, I want to make the biggest commission. Guess how you make the biggest commission? Sell with love and serve people the best. And it comes back to you. But if it's all about making your commission and that's your objective, you're going to leave so much money on the table. It'd be a shame. So check it out on LinkedIn. Connect with me on LinkedIn. Drop us a note at Engage, E-N-G-A-G-E, Engage at GarrisonGrowth.com. Let us know about your journey. We love to learn.
Dave, we also love to learn and we've learned much with you. Thank you for your time. This was an absolute pleasure. And for everybody else tuning in, go ahead and grab the resources that have been made available to support you in your growth as well. Thank you for listening to the Jason Mark Campbell Business Podcast. And of course, keep selling with love.
Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business and sell more with less effort thanks to the Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/redcircle, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/redcircle now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/redcircle.